Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. Winter is a great time to catch up on reading. Today we're bringing you a list of great books for children and young adults by Native authors. Colors in the Cree Language, the Indian Child Welfare Act, and Stealing Native Bone Marrow are a few of the topics found in these books. We'll talk with an expert about what makes these books truly exceptional and an interesting read. We go live right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Legislation championed by a U.S. Oregon congressman has passed the House and Senate. If enacted, it's set to benefit three tribes. KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
The Western Oregon Tribal Fairness Act cedes more than 17,000 acres of federal land to the Cow Creek Band of Umpqua Indians. Another 14,000 acres goes to the Confederated Tribes of Coos, Lower Umpqua, and Siuslaw Indians. It gives both tribes a land base since they regained federal recognition in the 1980s. As for the Coquel tribe, the act restores governance of their tribal forest, effectively decoupling them from federal land management rules. Mark Johnston is executive director of the Coquel tribe. He says they've managed their 5,400-acre forest efficiently, despite the unique legal burden put on them in 1996.
And for the Coquel, we've been certified by Forest Stewardship Council, FSC, for a number of years. And you'll take a look at our land, and we truly believe in a balance between conservation and sustainable harvest.
The bill now heads to President Trump's desk. Tribal officials hope he'll sign off on it. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
Dozens of cold weather records were tied or broken over much of the plains over the weekend. All of South Dakota's reservations are being impacted by cold air temperatures and dangerous wind chill. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt has more.
At least a half dozen tribal schools in South Dakota closed for the day because of the dangerous cold. One school, Teospetsopa, in north-central South Dakota, stayed closed because of heating issues in the building. Matthew Dukes with the National Weather Service in Sioux Falls says there's a bit of a warming trend coming, but it's pretty short-lived.
The main brunt of the cold weather actually came through the area over this weekend. Now, as we move through the rest of this week and into next weekend, this is just kind of a glancing blow of a little bit of cold air that's left up to our north. It won't nearly be as cold as what we saw here over the New Year's holiday weekend. Temperatures from Tuesday through Friday will only average into the single digits over the eastern half of the state to perhaps even the teens and some 20s over the western half of the state through Friday.
Aberdeen in northeast South Dakota broke a 99-year-old record low on New Year's Day with a reading of 32 degrees below zero. Wind chills bottomed out at minus 50 in some locations. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellen Bolt.
A weather emergency has been issued by the Blackfeet Nation in Montana. On Monday night, the tribe activated its emergency plan for winter storms due to a blizzard. The National Weather Service has issued a blizzard warning. An incident command center has been set up at tribal headquarters in Browning. Tribal offices are closed and residents are asked to seek shelter and only travel for emergencies. The Mashpee Wampanoag tribe has laid off some employees, the Cape Cod Times reports. A letter to workers cites reasons as funding and litigation involving the tribe's effort to build a casino. The Massachusetts tribe received federal recognition status in 2007 and has since beefed up efforts to build a resort casino in the city of Taunton. The tribe is reportedly in hundreds of millions of dollars in debt. The layoffs were recently issued with official termination on January 12th. Tribal leaders have long maintained the casino would provide jobs and boost the economy. A Superior Court judge rejected part of the Scaticoke Nation's lawsuit seeking millions of dollars from Connecticut for land the tribe claims was taken more than 200 years ago. The Hartford Current reports last week's decision included two documents from the 1700s which show use and not ownership. Other parts of the lawsuit remain, including mortgage claims. The tribe is seeking more than $600 million for 2,000 acres it says the state took without compensation. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by Canyon Records, producer of Native American music, including R. Carlos Nakai's million-selling Canyon Trilogy. All Canyon titles available from iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, and CanyonRecords.com. Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. What book from this past year was so good you couldn't put it down? Or was there a book that was so bad you ended up throwing it across the room? Our guest today works tirelessly to make sure we hand our Native kids books that they don't want to put down. She's also got her eyes out for books with positive and realistic Native depictions. For almost 12 years, Debbie Reese has been writing critical analysis and reviews of books and other media by and about Native Americans. Her blog is a comprehensive resource for children's and young adult literature. She is with us today to share her list of her favorite books from 2017. And we want to hear from you, too. Do you have a favorite children's or young adult book by a Native author that came out in 2017? Maybe one even older. Call us and share. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Or tell us what you're thinking on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And joining us now is Debbie Reese. She is the founder of American Indians and Children's Literature Blog, and she is a citizen of Nambe Pueblo. It's our pleasure to welcome her back to our airwaves. Debbie, thank you for starting off 2018 with us.
Well, I'm so glad to be here with you and listening to some of the things that you said about older books. Absolutely. I hope people call in with older books. One of the key and significant things that all of us can do is keep buying the older books, too, because if we don't, they go out of print. And we need them to stay in print so our kids can get their hands on them. I could talk at length about some of my favorite books that are older, in particular ones by Cynthia Leitick Smith. She's a Creek writer who wrote a book called Jingle Dancer about the first time a little girl did the jingle dance that I wish I had when my daughter danced for the first time. Listeners should look for that one right off the bat and get that for their little ones.
Well, Debbie, we know you got lots of great suggestions of what to thumb through. And Debbie, what you've been doing for almost or over a decade has really put people in touch with books that are sharing a little bit of just who we are as Native people and maybe even breaking down stereotypes. And before we get more into great reads, let's do a little bit of history as to why you started making this list or even bringing attention to books that you feel should get some eyes, ears, and maybe even imaginations going. Let's talk a little bit about that, Debbie.
Okay. Well, historically, white people have written bad books about Native people. And by bad books, I mean stereotypical ones that have us either as this romantic, buff warrior, or a person in a headdress, or a bloodthirsty Indian. So we have a range of these depictions at either extreme that forget that when we were fighting these fights, we were fighting to preserve and protect our parents and our children and our grandmas and grandpas. The idea that we were just people of only men and only men who fought white people because we didn't like white people is a misrepresentation of the history of who we are as indigenous peoples of this continent. And so part of what I wanted to do was say, we need to push those books aside and put in place of them books by Native writers that tell us who we were, who we are, and do so in accurate ways that help readers understand who we are, why we fought and why we continue to fight today. Using the legal system, in your opening news segment, you talked about some of the tribes and the things that we're pushing for legally, but also with the stories that Native writers create.
And when we do a lot, when we do this, we really learn a lot. And even people who are immersed in the culture, sometimes you open some of these books and you're learning things you didn't know before. And Debbie, maybe there are some fans who wait for any kind of post you're putting out or flags on new books. If you'd like to join us too and share your thoughts on great reads, maybe there were some in 2017 that really stood out, you can join us at 1-800-996-2848. And Debbie, the work that you've done has really put people in contact with some great books. And so let's go ahead and jump into some of the ones that really stood out for you in 2017. What would you like to share about some of the books that you have introduced people to or either spent time reading, rereading, or maybe even gifting? What's at the top of your list from 2017?
That's a tough question. I'm going to start with Simon Ortiz and Cheryl Graves' The People Shall Continue. It's a picture book that came out, 41 years ago. It's a comprehensive history of Native people on this land. And Simon starts with, we were here, and this is what we were called, and this is what we did. So he's very specific. He's very tribally specific, and that's one of the things that I look for is writers that are Native generally talk about their specific nations and information about their specific nations. White writers don't do that. They just go with Indian and anything flies in their point of view. But Native writers don't do that. And so Simon's book is an epic that starts pre-contact and comes up to the present day on how we have to work together as Native peoples, how we fought, what we fought, why we fought. All of that is in his book, and because it came out 41 years ago, it's kind of got its arms in a way wrapped around everything that Native writers are doing now, because they don't turn away from things that are hard, and they don't romanticize those things that are hard either. So I highly recommend people pick up a copy of The People Shall Continue. It's a paperback book published by Lee and Lowe. Simon started writing this book way back in the 70s when, things were very hot and hopping with Native activism, pushing very hard for what became huge gains that we have all made in terms of self-determination. So I really like that book, and there are other pieces in there that I think are also important. Simon doesn't is careful. He's very careful about what he will share about our spiritual ways and our traditional stories. We all, as Native people, grow up knowing that we don't tell white people certain things because they're going to use them in ways that they should not use. So we have, we draw curtains on our stories. These are things that we know what can be shared and what cannot be shared. So I think there's a lot in his book that has broad application for what I see in the body of books that came out in 2017.
And I think this book really stands out, too, just taking a look at some of the things that are being profiled in there. Debbie, what do you think happens when we start giving young people books like this and introducing them to maybe another way of thinking? Or we're giving them books where, for the first time, they're seeing somebody who looks like them, who comes from a tribal nation. What happens when we do this? And again, folks, maybe you want to answer that question. You can do it by calling 1-800-996-2848. Debbie, go ahead.
Well, sometimes what you're talking about is a mirror book in the academic or scholarship in children's literature. We have these ways of thinking about children's books, and some are mirrors. If you have a mirror book, it is one that reflects who you are in some way. So that term is attributed to Rudine Sims Bishop. She's an African American scholar who studies children's books, and her entire metaphor is windows. That books can be a window to another person's culture, or they can be a mirror. We have very few books that are mirrors. So when I come across a book by a Native writer that mirrors some part of who I am as a Native person, there are times when I want to jump off of my couch and say, yes, because it feels so good. And I'm an older woman, and I think that young children could have that experience too if these books were given to them. Right now, I think you know that the statistics on how Native children fare in school and in other dimensions of society is not good. Their selves are not reflected to them in children's books the way that white children and their experiences are in just about every book. So I think that with mirror books that reflect children's Native lives, they will be receiving the kinds of affirmation at school that can help them develop a shield that protects that identity and helps them go forth when they encounter other problems in the grocery store, at the football game, where all of these places where stereotypical imagery occurs.
And it happens a lot. It's an interesting take, and we do appreciate you being here with us today. Debbie Reese is on the line with us. If you'd like to talk directly to her, you can. She is the founder of the American Indians and Children's Literature blog. Maybe you've read it before, or you just Googled it. Once you heard it at the top of the show, call in and join our conversation, 1-800-99-NATIVE. Well, Debbie, we're going to bring in another voice. We're going to go now to Marcy Rendon, and she is the author of Murder on the Red River. And Marcy is a member of the White Earth Nation. Marcy, thank you for joining us, and welcome to the hour.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Hi, Debbie.
And Marcy, you are on Debbie's list, and in a good way about your book. And so I want to hear a little bit more about Murder on the Red River. Tell us more.
Well, I wrote the book as a murder mystery. I thought I was just writing a murder mystery. I read murder mysteries kind of like other people watch television. And so when I sat down to write this, in my mind, I was just writing a murder mystery. And as the book progressed, it became clearer and clearer that it really was about this young Native woman, Ojibwe woman, who was raised in foster care in the 1950s and 60s. And she's at an age where she's living on her own. And her time in foster care, and this was before ICWA, really shaped her strength, her resilience, her ability to live in the world and to be resilient. And part of the story is her helping the county sheriff, who she's been friends with since she was a little girl, solve a murder in the Red River Valley, which is in northern Minnesota. The Red River is the only river on the continent that runs north, goes up through Winnipeg and into Hudson Bay. And it's the story set around that Red River Valley.
And Marcy, what did you think about introducing something like Indian Child Welfare Act or just things surrounding youth and this topic? You know, what was it like? Was it something intentional? Is it why you wrote the book? Tell me more.
So like I said earlier, when I was writing the book, I thought I was just writing a murder mystery. And it wasn't until it went to the editor and other readers that people said, Marcy, there's this whole background in here about us as Native people in foster care. And I said, oh, really? Like, it just, I think it was such an integral part of life growing up during that time that sometimes when we're so... when it's so much a part of us, we don't think of it as something out of the ordinary or extraordinary. And so the way that it got wove, I didn't set out to tell a story about us in foster care. I set out to tell a murder mystery. And the fact that this theme of foster care and pre-ICWA and the damage that was done to families and communities and individuals before ICWA became a part of the story, yeah.
And I think this is woven into the fabric of many families of understanding the pull that some of this can bring on generations. And so, Debbie, I'm going to turn to you. What was it that really stood out for you on this book and why you told folks it's time to read more of this? Go ahead.
Well, I started reading Marcy's book. This is not the first of Marcy's books that I've read. She does have other stories, and you should look for her other work on my blog because I've written about some of her other work. She is providing those mirrors that I think Native children and teens need. Now, Marcy's book, I think, was not necessarily written for a teen audience, but it's one of what we call in the children's literature arena a crossover book, where it works very well for an adult audience, but also very well for an older teen audience. So Marcy's, when I started reading that book and I came to the parts about foster care, I was like, oh gosh, Marcy, we need more of this. In particular, I was reading her novel after having read a novel by a white woman who has an ICWA theme in her book, but she also has all kinds of bogus Native spirituality in there. And she has her character going around ICWA. So that story is about trying to undo ICWA, work around ICWA. And that, to me, was a horrible thing to do to Native people, to Native children or Native teens who would happen to read that book. So I was reading Marcy's novel after having read that one and being very touched with how Marcy brings that forth, and that we need more of that for Native kids. And she does have a short story in a Minnesota book called Sky Blue Water that has a character who is part of the foster care system. So definitely get that for middle grade students, too. It's one of these things that is, as Marcy said, part of our experience, and being able to have that shown to us in a book is important.
And Marcy, for you, hearing the different things that attracted Debbie to it, what are your thoughts about this is what pulled her in?
This is what? I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part of the question.
What do you think about her review and some of the items that pulled her into the book and stood out for her? Is that what you wanted to hear, that folks are picking up some of this?
Yes. My intention in writing has always been, if you go to my website and where my artist statement is, my artist statement really is about creating mirrors for us as Native people. Having grown up in a time when those mirrors weren't there, how do we write things? How do I write things that other Native people can see themselves? The other thing that I hope comes through in all of my writing is the resilience that we have as Native people, that there are so many themes about historical trauma, and all of that is true. But when I think about who we are as Native people, our resilience far outweighs our traumatization. That's a word. Maybe I'm making up words here. But when I was thinking about all of the Native people who just have risen to the very top in spite of the trauma and the tragedies in their lives. And so that's a key piece of what I'm trying to put out in my writing, not just that we can see ourselves, but that we can see how we really thrive, are resilient, have beauty, have courage, have integrity. I mean, I'm trying to weave all of that into every story that I'm writing.
And so, Marcy, as you think about people picking up this book and reading it, is there any advice you have or inside information that you think helps to really connect to the storyline?
Oh, dear. I don't know. I have been very pleasantly surprised at the feedback that I've gotten from readers about how involved they are with the characters in the story, to the point where I'll do a reading, I'll read a piece from the book, and at the end of the reading, people will ask, well, is Cash going to come back? What's she going to do next? What is Wheaton the Sheriff going to do? What about those kids up on that reservation? And so part of what's so good for me about it is that people resonate with the characters. They want to know more about the characters. These characters actually are alive for the readers who have given, you know, the ones who have given me feedback.
Wow. And sometimes I imagine there are budding writers who might reach out to you, and maybe there's some who are listening right now. Do you have any advice, Marcy, on good storytelling?
Not on good storytelling. What I want to say to any Native writer is that keep writing, that we have to tell our stories. I am really tired of picking up books by non-Native writers that are being assigned to my grandchildren in schools. That, you know, it's like, no, I want stories by Native writers for my grandchildren so that when they read the stories, they're getting that worldview, not somebody trying to interpret our worldview. So I want Native people to write. And then the key piece is that they have to submit their writing for publication. They have to submit, and risk being told no, risk being told maybe you need to change this paragraph, maybe you could change that sentence. But if they never submit, then those books never stand a chance of getting published, or those stories never stand a chance of getting published.
Marcy, when do you know to draw the line and say, okay, I will not change this part? And that could probably be intimidating, too, if you're trying to get published. Any quick thoughts on that before the break?
Are there places where I don't compromise what I've written? Is that the question?
More so, where is that line? When do you know to tell a publisher, no, I won't change this?
When it's clear to me that it's a difference in a clear difference in worldview. Most of the time, the editors that I've worked with are kind, well, but uneducated in lots of ways about Native world. And so if I can stay open to having a conversation with people and say, no, like in Murder on the Red River, there's a part where I say something like, she never saw her mother again. And the editor said, well, how could that happen? This can't be true. And I said, no, it was true. It is true. Thousands of Native children have seen their families disappear. This is a truth that we live with, and I can't change that line just because it's something that you don't want to believe.
And Marcy, I want to hear what the publisher's reaction was to that. After the break, again, folks, if you want to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We are hearing about books that are ready for our young readers, some top ones of 2017. If you want to join us, maybe there's one you want to add to the list. 1-800-996-2848 is our number. It's never too early to start looking for ways to pay for college. There are a handful of scholarships available for Native American students to assist with the cost of education. On the next Native America Calling, we'll talk with experts about the best way to find and apply for this type of aid. We hope you'll join us.
I'm not. Peshe, este bicuena chimona ia nuab anyamante bosatea to la dolanzo mehnaptu. Is health insurance anto dicidanaptu. Is 1-800-318-2596 and penan agendanta is go.cms.gov/native health on our nua. Look here, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services don't not bid any to look in our. Elakwa.
Support by Amerind Media Group, offering compelling and entertaining films, TV series, and documentaries about the indigenous peoples from around the world. We are honored to share their cultures, traditions, and stories online with a no-charge trial at nativeflix.com. Support by Drumbeat Indian Arts, offering authentic Native American recordings and religious herbs, craft supplies, books, and a wide selection of Pendleton blankets at drumbeatindianarts.com. Valentine's delivery on orders placed by February 1st.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and thank you for starting off your new year with us. If you like books, you should check out our regular Book of the Month series. And once a month, we feature a Native author and give away 10 books. Last month, we talked to Daniel Vandever, author of the book Fall in Line Holden. If you want to hear that interview, visit our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. And while you're there, you can also see what we have coming up. And we've been talking with Debbie Reese today. She's a citizen of the Nambe Pueblo and author of the blog American Indians and Children's Literature. And we are hearing about top books of 2017. And we're also hearing from one of the authors of the book, the books on the list. And from children's board books to young adult novels, Debbie reads all of them and provides insight into what makes a good story by and for Native young people. And do you have some favorite Native children's and young adult books you'd like to share? Call us right now. The number is 1-800-996-2848. My pleasure to welcome the ladies back into the conversation. With us on the line is Debbie Reese, a citizen of Nambe Pueblo. Also here with us is Marcy Rendon, and she is the author of Murder on the Red River, and she's a member of the White Earth Nation. Marcy, it's our pleasure to have you here with us, too. And I know you got to get going here, but just want to give you a moment to finish your thought and finish the story you're telling us about standing your ground with publishers to make sure what you wrote and what's important to be told gets out there. Go ahead.
Okay, so Murder on the Red River was published by Cinco Puntos Press, and my editor was Lee Byrne. And we went back and forth and back and forth. She was an excellent editor. She was open to hearing what I had to say. And back when I was talking about the, you know, that line in the book about, you know, her mother just disappeared and Lee saying, how could that happen? And, or, you know, in disbelief, like, how could that happen? And I said, no, it did. It happened to thousands and thousands of Native children. And so she wanted me to include something in the storyline about, you know, the scooping that happened of Native children. And there was another part, I'm forgetting which piece it was now. Anyway, she wanted me to include some historical information in the body of the novel. And I said, you know, that I didn't want to turn this into a historical, you know, school book. That I really wanted it to stay a novel that people could just read and enjoy, read for entertainment, but that at the back of the book, there's a an author statement that talks about, you know, the scooping that happened of Native children, and then the introduction of ICWA, and some information from the Indian, Indian reparations, repatriation, Sandy Whitehawk's programs were adopted and fostered out of bringing children home, bringing parents back home to reunite with their children. So that's in the, you know, the author's notes at the end of the book. And that was our way of solving some of those questions that came up in the novel itself.
Well, I think it's exciting to hear that these kind of conversations are even going on with publishers. And I can't wait to get into this book. Marcy Rendon, thank you for being with us today here on Native America Calling.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. Thank you. Have a good year.
you too. And maybe there are some reads for young adults and children that you want to tell us about. Maybe something you passed on to your young reader this year. What was their reaction when they started reading these books, especially by Native authors? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We're going to go ahead and take a call. We're going to say hi to Tracy in Kansas, tuned in online. Tracy, thank you for your call. You're online.
Thank you for having me. Hello, Debbie. I'm wondering what you're interested in. I know you've got lots of recommendations on the website for 2017, but I'm interested in what's coming up in 2018 that you're most interested in. I know that there's several novels that are coming out this spring, and so I don't know if you've gotten advanced copies or things of those, but what's on tap that you're excited about?
Tracy, thanks for giving us a ring. You can call us, too, at 1-800-996-2848. Debbie, go ahead.
Okay. I have a short list right now. My list is short because I'm trying to really hit hard on the books by U.S. publishers. Canadian publishers do a lot more than we do down here in the States. I don't quite know why that is. But I'm looking forward to Eric Gansworth's new book published by Scholastic called Give Me Some Truth. I do have an arc on that and have spent some time with it and am enjoying it quite a lot. He also has a short story in a new anthology coming out called Fresh Ink. It's an anthology of non-white writers that I'm excited about as well. Tim Tingle has a book coming out called Stone River Crossing. I haven't seen it yet, but I do know about it. There's a new debut writer coming out, Dawn Axness Quigley. Her book is called Apple in the Middle. I made a list. So I'm very prepared for that question, actually. I wanted to be able to talk about books that are coming out, things that we can look forward to. In 2019, I know of two books by Native women. Cynthia Lytick-Smith has another book coming out there, young adult book, and Rebecca Roanhorse. Now, I'm going to say that again. Rebecca Roanhorse, because she's Pueblo, is going to have a book coming out in Rick Riordan's fantasy series. Rick Riordan is so hot with young readers, and so I'm really excited for her book, which is going to have some Navajo content and characters in it. So I'm excited about that. But I'm also wondering if that was Tracy Sorrell that called, because if it is, if she's still on the line, Tracy has a picture book coming out called We Are Grateful. Tracy is Cherokee, and her book is about Cherokee people and Cherokee children and the things that they're grateful for. Are you still there? Is she still on the line?
Let's check. Tracy, you there? Are you Miss Sorrell?
Yes. This is me. Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, cool. So can you say a few words about your book?
Yes, but I'm glad you gave me the names of the other ones that I need books to look for this spring, because I knew you would have a comprehensive list. And another one that I knew of that's coming in 2018 is Joe Bruschek's Chester Nez and the Unbreakable Code, the Navajo Code Talker story. So I had that one on my list. But, I have a debut picture book coming out on September 4th with Charles Bridge Publishing. And as Debbie said, it's looking at the practice of gratitude, and which is a universal value, but how is that expressed by Cherokee people? You know, and we're taught to express gratitude not just for, you know, wonderful things or blessings that we have in life, but also challenges, and that you do that all year long. You know, it's not something that just happens in Thanksgiving, you know, or in November, et cetera. And so it's a four seasons book, and it starts in fall when our Cherokee New Year starts, and then, like I say, goes throughout the four seasons following Cherokee people. And the editor had a suggestion to kind of have a family that is met at the beginning. And so there's people from the family kind of throughout the book. So regardless of who's in the picture, there's folks that, you know, kids can follow along with, which I was fine with. And it is my debut, so I wasn't really sure how that process would be, you know, having the publishing company hire an illustrator to go along with it. But it's been so wonderful and such a wonderful collaborative effort, because You know, Marcy had talked about her experience with the editor and having to educate them. And I just had a wonderful experience with the illustrator. She spent her own funds to come from Australia to northeastern Oklahoma, and we met, which never happens. I mean, in the picture book world, that so openly does an author and illustrator get to meet and work together. You know, you communicate through the editor or through the art director if the author gets to see any of the stuff at all. And so for us to be able to kind of have a research trip, for me to introduce her to people at home, and for them to, you know, be able to have access and look at her sketches and the final art and all these kind of things, because, you know, the thing that I impressed upon the editor and her and everyone is that, you know, this book is really the community all together. It's not, you know, just me. And so, anyway, it's been a wonderful experience.
Well, Tracy, now I can't wait to get my nose into it and start experiencing some of this collaboration. It sounds really exciting, and kudos to you. And folks, as you hear from different authors or book creators, maybe there's something you're wondering, or maybe there's a book in 2017 that your young reader couldn't put down. Maybe they read it twice, maybe even more. You can tell us about it by calling 1-800-996-2848. Tracy, great to hear from you there in Kansas. And Debbie, when, you know, looking ahead is great, and 2018 definitely has a lot in store. And as people find time, maybe this winter, maybe they were going to pick up some more of these books, you have a list out, you have recommendations, and you've discussed a lot of books in 2017 and get people closer to the author, why they're made, and more details. A lot of this can also be found on your blog. And so I want to go to a couple of titles that are featured. There is The Water Walker, as well as The Marrow Chief. Tell me a little bit about those and why they caught your eye.
Okay. The Water Walker is about Native women being active out there in the world, doing good things to protect the water. That has been a significant theme, as I think your listeners probably know. We've been following the Dakota Access Pipeline and the work going on there with Indigenous people protecting the water there. But there are many instances in which we have, as Native people, worked very hard for the water because it gives us life. And the Water Walker is an example of that, of Native women who have gotten together and walked around the perimeter of the Great Lakes to try and pray and draw attention to the idea that we have to protect the water. What is especially good about that is that it is by the women who are doing that work. The illustrations are terrific. There's one where the women are sitting around a kitchen table. It's clearly they're set in the present day, and they're sitting there strategizing. And I really like that as well, because it puts us in the present day doing the things that we need to do. So I like that a lot. And Dimmalene's Marrow Thieves is also related to activism and what's happening to the planet. We all know about climate change and the detrimental effects that it is having on many aspects of the earth. Dimmalene's novel is set in the future when things have gone to heck. Part of that involves, I don't want to say a whole lot about that because it is for me a page-turner novel and I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but in essence we have a story set in the future and things are not going well and white people can't dream anymore. Something has happened and they're not able to dream. But Native people can still dream. And so what happens is that white people want our ability to dream. And there is a thread in there that ability to dream has to be in our marrow. So there you have the title, Marrow Thieves, white people wanting something that we have. Historically, it's been the land. And during history, of course, we had the residential schools in Canada, the boarding schools in the U.S. So there's parallels and touchbacks to these moments throughout Marrow Thieves. Culminates in a beautiful coming together that just is one of those books that really just grabs your grabs your heart and squeezes it really hard and makes you care so much for the characters and for what's going on in the book. And one of the really positive things about Marrow Thieves as well is that it's doing really well in the U.S. and Canada by mainstream audiences. It has won major awards, both in Canada and the U.S. So I'm really excited for that, and I hope to see more from Demoline in writing for young adults.
And Debbie, we're about to hear from a contributor to the book, Black Bear, Red Fox, Colors in Cree. And go ahead and set it up. Tell our listeners a little bit about what it is, and then we'll meet Julie Flett.
Oh, hooray. I'm so glad Julie's going to be here. I have known Julie's work for several years. She is up in Canada and has been doing board books in particular for young children that introduce them to language, Cree language in particular. So you have her gorgeous art, which if you Google her name, you'll find her art. Her style is gorgeous and being more and more visible in more and more books, not just the books that she writes, but just in general. Her work is getting more visibility, and I like that a lot. But with her language books, she's telling stories using language and using Native characters and the things that Native people do, picking berries with Grandma, for example, and learning the names of animals along the way. With her colors book, she's done something that I don't recall seeing in her other books. There is a foreword part to the book where she tells us some about the ways that the Cree language works with language, how it modifies the words that we use based on the thing that we're talking about. So if you're talking about a black bear, that's a living object. And if you're talking about a black, stone, that's not a living object. So the Cree word is different. The way it's modified is different based on the thing you're talking about. And that's a very intellectual kind of engagement with language that I am really excited about. And so I'm glad she's going to be on today's show. I'll stop so she can talk.
All right, let's go ahead and meet her. On the line, we have award-winning author and illustrator Julie Flett, and she is Cree Métis. Our pleasure to have her here. Julie, welcome to the hour.
Hi, thanks for having me, and I've just really been enjoying listening to all of you.
Isn't it exciting to just hear all of these different titles and know that eventually these will make their way into young readers' hands? And so Julie, Debbie introduced us to your book, Black Bear, Red Fox, Colors in Cree. Anything more you want to share about why you did this?
Mm-hmm. I think for me, I come from a family, a grandfather, a grandmother, who are multilingual speakers, and I didn't learn the languages, and in particular Cree. And I think also, what we were talking about earlier, both Debbie and Marcy, about, not having books for our children, grandchildren, and then, books that we didn't have when we were growing up. So as an artist, an illustrator, this is something I can contribute to. And I'm really a beginner speaker, so I always work, with translators and speakers and sometimes family members. In this particular book with Cree speaker Solomon Ratt, and then I also worked with the Cree Literacy Network here in Canada, Arden Ogg, Joan O'Comas, and Eric Wolvengray. So, we worked, they really supported the work. And working on this book in particular was interesting because instead of going from English to Cree, we just translated the images into Cree. So there was, something interesting, I think, happens there. And maybe to go back, I'm just wondering if I should go back to something that Debbie was mentioning about animate and inanimate. And it is interesting because as you're learning Cree as Cree speakers, it's something so particular to the language. For example, a strawberry versus a raspberry. A raspberry would be animate and a strawberry inanimate. So it's something that you learn when you're learning the language. And then in the book, too, so in this book in particular, in the book before this book. I did a Colors in Cree, Numbers in Cree. So there were a lot of images of family and, three aunties laughing, and I think eight uncles ice fishing. And then in this book, so they're mostly animals. And maybe, again, going back to, this being a resource for speakers who are teaching Cree, but also an introduction for children and their caregivers. And I would be happy for the images to be used in, in other ways, in other languages, if, to share.
And Julie, how does it make you feel that maybe one day the reason somebody started speaking Cree or knows a Cree word really well is because of your book? How does that make you feel?
I mean, it's incredible. I think books are just a starting place, or, they're one of the resources, really working with speakers and community and, is vital. And so if this is a resource or an inspiration, that would be incredible.
Very nice. And maybe if you're listening to this in our archives and you get your hands on this book and you want to tell us what it meant to be able to learn Cree, you can give us a call, 1-800-99-NATIVE, or actually, you can send us an email, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. Well, ladies, we have another caller on the line. We're going to say hi to Pearl in Nombe, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Pearl, thank you for giving us a ring, and go ahead, you're on air.
Hi, Debbie, it's Pearl.
Hey, Pearl.
I just want to say nice job. It's very interesting hearing about the books. And just enjoyed it. Best wishes. And that's all I wanted to say. Maybe someday that we can get our killer language in a book. And that would be so cool.
That would, Pearl. Thank you for your call. And Debbie, there is so much more. We are getting close to the end of the hour here. And any more hat tipping you have for Native Authors of 2017?
Yeah, I think there's one that I want to say a little bit about. It's Not Your Princess. It's a book that has a hashtag as part of the title. So it's hashtag Not Your Princess. It's the rest of the title is Voices of Native American Women. It's published in Canada, but it has Native women in the U.S. and Canada who have contributed art and stories and poems and just little snippets of their lives. And it's absolutely gorgeous. And I think it speaks back to what Simon was talking about in The People Shall Continue, that we as Indigenous people survive because we are smart and we use everything that we have available to us to try and connect with each other, to try and help each other. So this is an example of technology, in this case, Twitter and hashtags on Twitter, being used to help Native people find each other and unite to fight certain kinds of things. In stereotyping in particular, so we had in the last few years, we had Not Your Mascot and we had Not Your Princess. And having this book, Not Your Princess, edited by Lisa Charlie Boy and Mary Beth Leatherdale, come out in 2017 during the year when we also had the hashtag MeToo, where Native women are saying, listen up, this is not okay, brings together several strands of what it means to be Native people, Native women today, writing and fighting for our survival, for the beauty of our lives. So I want to recommend that as well.
Well, they all sound like good reads, and can't wait to hear feedback on people who have reached out to some of these books and things they discovered when they started turning the pages. And Debbie, are there any guidelines or advice you have for Native parents in trying to find good books or what to look for when you are starting to get into these books and how to get the best from it? Any advice on good reading and absorbing material?
Yeah, one of the key pieces is to look for a specific Native nation. So if the author is, if your kids are assigned a book and there isn't a particular nation mentioned in there, then you're likely over there in stereotype land, and that's not good for your kid and it's not good for the other children in the classroom. I have a lot of parents write to me saying, my daughter or my son was given this book. Can you help me to talk to the teacher about it? And so generally when I get those emails, I will go look for that book, and I will do an in-depth analysis of that book and then put it on my site. And that parent can take that analysis to that teacher or librarian so that those people can understand that Native people are thinking, reading, and pushing back on the kinds of books that are being handed to our children. So if there's anyone out there who has that happening to them right now or happened to them last year or last week, if you need some help, I'm a former professor in American Indian Studies. I grew up at Nambe Pueblo. I have tons of resources and experience and a network to draw on that will help me help you. So it's not easy work for you, because you don't have the resources, but I do. And so that's what I try, that's what I'm trying to do with my work, is help Native communities, wherever they are in the U.S. or Canada, speak back to the teachers and educational systems that have for hundreds of years hurt Native kids.
And Debbie, go ahead and give those contacts out.
My blog is American Indians in Children's Literature. If you type that into your search bar, you'll find it. I'm also on Twitter. My handle at Twitter is Deb Reese, D-E-B-R-E-E-S-E. And I'm on Facebook, Debbie Reese on Facebook. So please do look me up, and I will help you if you ask.
All right. And plenty of archives to search through there on her blog, too. Well, it has been a pleasure talking with Debbie Reese. Also, thank you to Julie Flett for joining us and Marcy Rendon. And folks, if there are more good reads that you came across in the past or ones that you're looking forward to get out there and you want to tell us about it, send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE or shoot us an email. We are back again tomorrow with a show about college scholarships. We'll be ready for your questions too. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Senior producer is Monica Brain. Associate producer is Andy Murphy. And Marino Spencer is our engineer. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood, kicking off 2018 with you. We'll do more of it tomorrow.
Break the silence. End sexual violence.
It's time to end sexual violence. Stop pretending it doesn't exist. Stop turning your head and walking away from this crime. It happens. You are not alone. So break the silence. Tell someone, talk about it, and report it. Having this conversation is the first step to breaking the silence. Stand up and join us in the fight to stop sexual violence now. Break the silence. Support provided by the Native American Community Board.
Program support from AmeriCorps Vista. AmeriCorps Vista members make a difference in the fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining valuable skills. We have rewarding service opportunities around the country, focusing on economic opportunity, healthy futures, education, and more. It will change your life and the lives of others. Information at AmeriCorps.gov/VISTA.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.